Greetings, dear, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Working Experience, a very warm, open-arm audio embrace and a squeeze. This episode is brought to you by my company, One Circle Media. One Circle Media is a hybrid digital agency and media content creator. We create and design apps, websites, videos, social media content, and physical products. We are artists, directors, designers, producers, coders, editors, thinkers, makers, and creators who embrace story and creativity from design, web and app development, animation, docs, features, TV shows, digital and social media content to physical products. For our clients, we create content that builds networks and audiences across multiple platforms. Check out our work at onecircledigital.com and onecirclebrand.com. If you work for a network, studio, brand, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. This episode is also brought to you by an app that I created called Still Believe. Still Believe transforms a picture in your home into video proof of your child's favorite magical characters. With the app, parents can catch the magic of the Tooth Fairy, leaving money under their children's pillow, or Santa delivering presents on Christmas Eve in their home. You download the app, take a picture, and we create the magic. We utilize feature film visual effects artists to transform your picture into video. Just tell your kids that you have a special app that can detect and capture the Tooth Fairy, then present them with the video proof in the morning. The look on their faces is priceless. Your Still Believe video is created in minutes, and you can then save it to your phone and share it on social media. The app is available for the iPhone and Android, and it's free to download. Our aim is to bring joy and wonder into the hearts of children around the world. Check it out at stillbelieve.co. Thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Dan, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was rubbing his
Sexual
toenails at his desk.
I
can't take it anymore.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Working Experience Podcast. This is Maddie Kay.
And this is John, and we're going to discuss bullshit jobs.
Yeah, before I do that, let me give a shout out to True Crime. What's the name? I was listening to their podcast. I've listened to two episodes of. I'm sorry, let me find... where is this?
As always, Matt is off to a dashing start.
Crime Junkie.
He wants to give a shout-out, then there's 30 to 40 seconds of utter silence as he fumbles around. He forgets the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
Hats off to Maddie Kay at the top of the podcast.
Let's see. 90% of success is preparation, which is why this podcast has virtually gone nowhere.
There's zero prep work.
No, because I just thought of this. It's called Crime Junkie, and it's done by two women who I'm forgetting their name, but they do a great podcast. They take different crimes that have occurred, and they tell the story very well. I was listening to another episode last night, and just wanted to give a little shout out.
I read that the true crime stories, TV shows, podcasts, radio shows are very popular with young girls. So, Matt, you're in good company. It's Maddie Kay and young girls who are fixated on these true crime stories.
Let me tell you, a good serial killer story, I love it. I don't know. It just fascinates me.
A good romance novel.
Yeah, good.
A good Fifty Shades of Grey Part 15. Danielle, Maddie's all over that.
Danielle Steele. I'm all about Danielle Steele. All right. So as John said, we'll talk about bullshit jobs. Now, our job is not, because we pulled in a cool $60 off our sponsor Spotify last month. Is that not correct?
Let me correct Maddie there. Oh. That is $66. Damn, and that's 66, $66 US.
US dollars. Now, let me break down the finances for you. 50% to John, 50% to me. That's $33 in Maddie K's pocket. Okay? So I'm going to march in to my boss Monday morning and say, see you later, Jack. I don't need this anymore. You like that?
And we have merch coming out. We have t-shirts coming out. Oh, so when
out,
you
baby.
Quit your job, you could be wearing a branded t-shirt from the Working Experience.
That's right.
Just a little cherry on top.
You know, I was telling a mutual friend, Tom, about our financial success, and he was scoffing a bit at the deal that we had arranged for the $17.50 per 1,000 podcast episodes. I'm like, well, you know, but it's, yeah, start somewhere, right?
No, it's not episodes. It's per 1,000 downloads or listens.
Right. So I don't know. He thought we should have driven a harder bargain. And I said, well, we're not exactly playing one off against the other. Okay, it's not really that.
This is our sole advertiser.
This is it. I mean, you know, so thank you, Spotify. I've been delving into the Spotify. Ooh, that doesn't sound good. The Spotify realm lately. I'm not Mr. Technology, but I did get a new iPhone, which has sort of opened my horizons with those things. So that'll enable me to waste more time and hours in the day, which I think is what people do at these bullshit jobs.
Yeah, so we've spoken about bullshit jobs in the, I believe it was last year when the article originally came out, and Matt and I felt like we needed to give the topic a little refresh, a little new spin from the Working Experience.
Well, this is a new article in The Economist, which talks about I guess he wrote an essay in 2013 when it uses the phrase viral fame with cubicle zombies everywhere. That's a little judgment laden, isn't it? Cubicle zombies? I mean, geez. You know, it's funny. The cubicle was designed originally to, like, loosen things up and make it more, like, dynamic. You could move. I guess the original idea was you could move the cubicle walls around and create different workspaces and things like that, but the cubicle has now
because it was always like just like closed offices.
Well, it's now become synonymous though with, you know, just
your little prison cell.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because they're all gray too. They made them all like the same color gray, and it's like what an inspiring color that is, you know.
Well, it's a little prison cell but without a ceiling. Like,
yeah,
if you can jump high, you can escape.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor.
Oh, and you also have a door that,
yeah,
well, you have an entrance and exit way that really there's no door there.
No,
so anybody can just jump in your cubicle unexpected.
Good.
Or peer over and look in, which is a specialty of Manny K.
I love that aspect of it. Just peeping over the top of the cubicle.
No warning signs. No. Just a very slow peer over.
And then my cubicle neighbor hears, "How are you doing, Eleanor?" Out of nowhere. "That's a lovely dress you have on today. Are you enjoying that croissant?" And it's just creepy enough to make them uncomfortable, but not really. HR can't really do anything about it. That's where I really breathe, right in there. So it says, he rails against the feudal retinues of basically useless flunkies. I love the term clunky.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a nice little word salad that he put together. Well, this jumped out at me. Something like 37 to 40% of workers, according to surveys, say their jobs make no difference.
Well, I mean, you know, you got to be out there. I mean, honestly, we've talked about this. These people would just be roaming the streets, and then we'd have a lot of problems. So they got to go somewhere. And they also have to consume. They have to go out to restaurants. They have to buy sneakers, go on vacations. Those people need jobs who are running the hotels and the airlines. So,
well, the assumption is that they've, you know, when you look at this from the outside, you think that individual has hit pay dirt. Like, they do nothing and they get paid for it. But as the article explains, is like, if you want to break a man's psyche, you know, and they would do this in the gulags in the Soviet Union, is they would, you know, they'd set you out in a field, have you dig a huge hole and then fill it in and then rinse and repeat. So your work was meaningless and basically drove men to madness.
Yeah. And that seems to be the corporate design today. Inadvertently, I suppose. But
see, with Manny Kay, he gets hired for a job that has meaning, where he actually has to do something.
I know.
And then he moves that needle to the bullshit job sector of where he makes his job useless.
Right.
You know, that's a talent.
It's impossible for me to pass that on to anybody. It's just innate. it's innate soul.
Well, Matt, I thought that was going to be one of the chapters of the masterclass of how to make your job useless.
Yeah, essentially by pushing your responsibilities onto other people. It's an art form. It's not an exact science. I'm not going to lie here. Craft is
it's a dance.
Yeah,
I
call things craft where you have art meeting science is craft. So there's a certain amount of science to it, but there's a certain amount of finesse, certain amount of art, certain amount of guile. That, yeah, I just kind of shove.
And you have to have the ability to improvise on the spot.
I love how it says, their jobs really are just as pointless as they think they are. Boy, David Graeber is not exactly a light at the end of the tunnel, is he? That if that job or even the whole industry were to vanish, either it would make no difference to anyone or the world might be even a slightly better place.
but you know, but he's got a point, because there is, you know, there's middle managers, and then there are managers who are compensated based on how big their team is. And so you have layers of management, and then you have teams that are bloated because of the, you know, false compensation model. And then all of a sudden you have half the people that are basically useless. I mean, I've been in meetings at very big corporations, networks, and studios. And, you know, the meeting will have 30 people in it. And there are about five people that are actually doing the work. Everyone else. And I always know who has kind of like a useless job, because they wait to the end of the meeting to say something just to justify their existence.
That must lead to a lot of neuroses. Like, I would be very, very uncomfortable with that, because I'd always think, like, my job was going to go away, that somebody was going to realize this and, you know, be like, what does he do here all day? Okay, well, you know, I know, like, in jails, in prisons, like, if the prisoners are occupied, if they have things to do, they have a lot fewer incidents, a lot fewer problems. But nowadays they've taken away all the educational classes, vocational classes, and they have a lot more problems, because these guys and women sit around all day with nothing to do, and you get anxious, you get irritable, you know, most people do. I mean, most people kind of want to feel like, you know, they don't want to be overburdened with responsibility, but, you know, well, as Aaron Griffin pointed out, you know, people working, I'm working 80, 90 hours a week. To do what? Develop a new DoorDash app to get McDonald's delivered? I mean, you know, talk about
Shout out to DoorDash. I used it last night.
Oh, good.
Because I was too lazy to get in my car and drive out. and my son wanted to order from this particular place, Burgerology. And I didn't want to deal with the going into Huntington with the parking and stuff. So I ordered it. And I got to say, it was quite convenient.
But you actually used DoorDash last night?
Oh, yeah, I did. I used it. I used it.
Here I am trashing it, and here John is.
And I'm their biggest customer.
Yeah. Well, it was awkward, though, when the DoorDash person arrived at the same time with the Tasker person. Because you didn't want to change the light bulb in the bathroom. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, everyone shows up at once.
Right. While you're sitting on the couch watching TV. Yeah. See, that's...
Dad, the guy's here to clip your toenails.
Yeah, yeah. There's like five people who show up.
Send them in.
Somebody's... changing light bulbs. Another person is like,
changing, you know, yeah, I don't want to change the light
bulb. No, here's, you could have the Tasker, the DoorDash person show up. You could have the groceries delivered at the same time. You could have all kind. The person's out mowing.
And the guy in the Uber is outside honking the horn to take me to some massage place.
Right. Well, to drive your kids someplace because you don't want to do it. And the whole time, you're just sitting on the couch.
I'm sleeping. Yeah. I'm on the couch, passed out.
And then you're saying, thank God for that. I just don't have time to do all these things.
I have no time.
Honestly.
I have no time.
Well, listen,
I'm busy coming up with business ideas,
right.
Designing T-shirts. Right. I don't have time to go pick up food.
I like telling people when I haven't done something, my fallback is always, I'm an ideas man. I'm a big picture guy.
Yeah. Big picture.
Big picture guy. I don't really know about the details.
I don't get into the weeds. I'm up in the clouds.
I mean, like Tasker, and who is it? Kathy Lee Gifford. Remember her? Regis and Kathy Lee. She's the spokesperson for Tasker. And you know Kathy Lee.
Wait, is it Tasker or TaskRabbit? Or was TaskRabbit once something and now is gone?
Hold on, let me see. Task should be fairly easy to figure out. TASK. TaskRabbit?
Yeah, TaskRabbit.
Okay, then there's Taskmaster. Let me look up Taskmaster.
I guess just choose your poison.
No, it's TaskRabbit. That's it. Because you know Kathy Lee Gifford, she's not going to clean her toilet. Forget that.
God, you know, God forbid.
I mean, or let you change the light bulb or, I don't know, whatever it is. I mean, Netflix doesn't watch itself. So you have to watch the Netflix. And I frequently tell my students, I sort of say it as a joke. They'll be like, you know, Mr. Kerr, did you grade those essays yet? And I'll be like, nah, I was watching Netflix last night, so I didn't. And inevitably, the question follows, what are you watching on Netflix? So then we get in a little conversation about
that. Well, there was a bit of an uneasy moment when the DoorDash guy handed me my meal, and I was under the assumption that he was actually going to feed it to me.
You were just sitting at the table with your napkin tucked into your shirt, and you're like, waiting for him to like, and you're like, I have to pick this up.
Do you want a fork or a spoon? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I don't really know how to do any of this. I guess if you know what's funny though is when I say jokingly I was watching Netflix, that's become a pretty valid excuse. Like, they don't really laugh about it. They think like, oh, okay, you know, like.
There's a ton of content on there. You got to get through it.
You got to get through it. I don't understand people.
Well, this is a time to plug our new app, Asswipe. This is like a DoorDash for wiping your ass. If you don't want to do that, Matt and I we're in development of an app right now.
That's...
We're having a little bit of trouble signing people on to be the actual ass wipers.
Well, we're offering,
but we'll get over that hump.
We're offering $3.50 an hour. I mean, you know, that's, there you go. Plus tips.
Yeah, and we don't pay for transportation, fuel, benefits, any of that stuff.
No, not at all. I like this quote here. Executives who pride themselves on downsizing use the money saved to fill their offices with futile retinues of useless monkeys. I love that. Useless flunkies. That's me. That's me. Always by the boss with a folder, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. Let me go take care of that for you.
And you're recycling reports that you've written like 3 years ago that nobody reads anyway. But you always have a big handful of them ready to hand it out to any guy that comes by.
Well, you know, I think a lot of companies exist on, like, I went to, there's a supermarket I go to all the time. Like, I like going to the same place because, you know, food shopping to me is just, I mean, I don't mind it that much, but I have my routine. I just want to get in there and get out of there. And now they've changed the whole place around. They moved stuff here, stuff there. And I'm like, why did you do this? Like, what point does this serve? Like, why? What was the issue with the way it was before? Like, now the cereal isn't in that aisle. It's over in this aisle. And they moved the condiments here, there, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, just to give people something to do, I guess. I don't know. Like, there seems to be no more, it's no more convenient than it was before. So a lot of these companies, I think they just, like, reissue directives. They like, a friend of mine works for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and for no reason on God's green earth, they just removed all the printers from people's desks and moved them into, like, two printers into a central location, which is a lot less convenient for everybody, for no real reason, just because somebody needs some. And he said, I think it's because somebody in HR needed something to do, and so now they've made everything very inconvenient for everyone. And it's like, because of these bullshit jobs, like, they have to make work. And the problem with that is they end up doing things that make other people's lives more difficult. It's like, okay, this was a routine. I understand the value sometimes of getting out of your routine, but sometimes the routine just saves me time. Like, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to get creative with it. I just want to get it done, but no.
Well, I mean, well, they have to give people something to do. Mm-hmm. You got to do something.
Exactly, exactly. And if that doesn't, but again, like, that's fine. But if you're making everyone's lives less convenient, it's like, all right, well, that's wonderful.
Well, the article goes on to say that he focuses on bullshit jobs are in middle management, PR, human resources, and Matt and I love to dump on HR. A lot of brand managers, creative vice presidents, financial consultants, compliance workers, corporate law, telemarketing.
Yeah, what about them?
How do we get a job in telemarketing? You mean, no, those are the fields that are the bullshit jobs.
Yeah. I love this. You're being forced against your will to be a fraud and a parasite. Boy, he really has wonderful word choice here. It is interesting, though. They ask him if this has, like, wider political implications, and he says, I think a lot of the often quite legitimate rancor directed at the liberal elite is based on resentment of those working class people see as having effectively grabbed all the jobs where you'll actually get paid well to do something that is both fun and creative, but also obviously benefits society. But he's saying that's really not true. I mean, you may get paid well. You may get paid 120, 150 grand a year, but you're not really doing anything, which is, I guess, you know, after a while, there's a phrase that we read an article in class a couple of years in a row by Dwight R. Lee, and it's called something to the effect of if money doesn't buy you happiness, you're not spending it right. And it's, which is meant to be a bit ironic, but the idea being that people have what's called sensory adaptation. So you buy a new car, you like it initially. And this is true of anything. Like, you enjoy it initially, and then you get tired of it, and you want to buy a new car. And he said, you know, essentially, that's as good as it gets. Like, that's just the way people are. So, you know, you might be initially excited to get a job as a, you know, vice president and you're getting $175,000 a year. But after like 3 years, you don't really care anymore because you're used to that being your salary and you don't like your job. And you're just like, this sucks. And
right. But that's why we preach the gospel of hustle. Because what's better than $175,000 a year? $275,000.
Well, then,
what's better than 3 ounces of Coke? 6 ounces of Coke. What's better than 2 strippers? 10 strippers.
More.
So on and so forth.
Right.
More. More and more. But the article, and this I know from experience, the article cites that whole teams of people are just there, for instance, to design the graphics for reports, write accolades for in-house magazine that nobody reads. I have worked with large corporations and I have seen this where they'll spend hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars on graphics for internal communications, and you know the stats on it are laughable about how many people actually consume it. More people make fun of it than actually read it, and there are whole teams dedicated to this.
Yeah, and again, it's just like if that whole division just disappeared and that newsletter or in-house magazine never came out again, who would care? Like who?
Nobody.
Yeah, and that's got to be kind of, I mean, you can kind of laugh it off for a while, and if you're, and some people don't care. Some people are like, look, I'm earning my $150K a year, and there you go. Like, that's all I want out of it. I don't care about job satisfaction. That doesn't matter to me. I've got a nice house, got a pool, you know, kids are in good schools, whatever. There you go. But then there are other people who are like, this is terrible. I can't haul myself, or I do haul myself, but off to work every day and just do it. And I mean, look at, like, advertising. I mean, that whole industry. Like, the advertising budget for McDonald's. I mean, doesn't everyone know about McDonald's? Like,
what? Yeah, but you got to continually convince people to eat that garbage.
I know, and that's got to be kind of
disheartening. That's what it is. It's literally garbage.
Yeah, and that has got to be, you know, like, I was talking about this with someone the other day. My neighbor's landscapers were there, and, you know, to them it's a job, but, like, they do a really nice job. I look at their yard, and it looks good. And, you know, there must be a certain amount of, like, satisfaction in that. Like, they don't own the house, I know that, but it's like, we cut the lawn, we did the mulching and all that, and, like, the job's done, you know, and we move on to the next yard. And it's, you're outside. I'm not glamorizing it. I mean, it's tough work and all that, and I'm not saying everybody would want to do it, you know, for their livelihood, and the guys who do it obviously are doing it, you know, for the money, but there must be a certain amount of satisfaction that you do not get writing for an in-house magazine that no one reads, you know? And it's just like, okay.
So your neighbor has people come over and do their lawn and you do your lawn, correct?
I do my own, yes.
Now, do you ever get jealous of the way the lawn looks by your neighbors?
Their lawn looks better. Their yard looks better than mine. They have, like...
Well, why don't you, next time you mow your lawn, why don't you take your lawn clippings, march over to the center of their lawn, and dump it right in the middle?
That's right, just to show my dissatisfaction with the whole thing. I don't really care that... I mean... Honestly, some lawns, everybody around me has landscapers and stuff, and some of them look a little fussy, like it's a little too much. My neighbor looks, it's very tasteful. It looks better than mine, I'll say that. I mean, they have professional equipment and all that, but, you know, it's the type of job where, I don't know, I've never really done a lot of landscaping myself, so, but I could see it.
We could do a whole podcast on landscaping, lawns, why people have lawns, the whole, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, making sure you have the perfect country club lawn. We could do a whole podcast on that.
That no one cares about, that your neighbors don't care about anyway. Like, it really, some of the lawns...
Well, it's that's not to be said. I mean, there's a house about 6 doors down from me, And these people don't care. They just let their lawn and bushes and everything go to crap. The town comes in about twice a year and cuts their lawn against their will, and then sends them a bill for about $2,000 every time they come.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and what happens is neighbors complain. The town comes in. I guess it's within their right. And they clean everything up and then send them and add that bill to their tax bill.
Is this like a big house, like with a lot of land?
It's about an acre, yeah.
So would you say these people have money to probably pay a landscaper?
They do, but there's a lot of the house is owned by the grandmother. Her daughter died of a drug overdose. Her grandchildren are, you know, drug addicts. It's not a.
So wait, this
we call it the, we call it the Breaking Bad house.
This is a grandmother who essentially lives on her own.
Yes, with her grandkids and I think another. I don't know if it's her boyfriend or just some guy. I'm not sure.
Well, maybe I think the neighbors could maybe pitch in and help her out, maybe mow the lawn for her, something like that. But I guess that's not the way your community runs.
Yeah, I think we'd rather throw stones and then call the town and then deny that we called the town.
Yeah, that's a good way to
handle. Let me just
things.
Say right now, I don't call the town on her.
Yeah.
I want to make that clear.
Right. No, I mean, there's a house down the block. It's a disgrace. It's a crack house. I would call it a Breaking Bad house. I'm convinced they cook meth in there or they do something. And I think they were actually
That's what this house is. Yeah. And this is in a nice, and I'm sure in your neighborhood, this is a nice, you know, a very nice area. That's this house and this family's been destroyed by heroin, drugs, opioids. I mean, it's in a really, really nice community.
Well, to bring it back to bullshit jobs, I was seeing on, you know, that show Drugs Inc. They show it on like National Geographic. Yeah. Well, they had one on Wall Street. And, again, I don't know how much of all this is staged and whatnot, but they do have statistics about, you know, drug use on Wall Street and the financial sector, a lot of Adderall, cocaine, things like that. And, you know, that kind of feeds into that endless cycle of, like, you know, the old joke. I work more so I can make more money, so I can afford more coke, so I can work more, make more money, do more coke. You know, to, like, work all hours to, you know, and have a heart attack by the time you're 45. And, you know,
that's winning in life, man.
Right.
That's winning.
Right.
That's not a joke. That's you've won.
if that's what your life has become. But yeah, I mean, this one woman, she lives out in Brooklyn and she said she was a drug dealer. And she said, you know, I deal pretty specifically with Wall Street because she said these guys have a lot of money to spend and they'll spend it. They don't really, they're not going to haggle with you over the price. And so it's pretty safe, you know, and she said it surprises me how many of these guys end up screwing up their whole lives, but, you know, that's what they do. And they, well-educated, probably from good families and all that, but, you know, it's that, I guess, bullshit job that, well, like I was saying, it probably creates a lot of anxiety. Like, Jesus, what am I doing? Like, this is really not satisfying or...
Yeah, but I mean, I think there also is a lack of self-awareness with people. You know, I don't think people, you know, it's like, look, I've got this, like you said, I got the house, I got the pool, the wife, the kids, and then there's also this FU mentality. Like, I got mine, you get yours.
Yeah. But, you know, I do think, as this quote here, you quoted or paraphrasing Dostoevsky about the digging a hole, filling it again. I mean, if you paid somebody $250,000 a year and said, listen, this is what you're going to do for 50 weeks a year, you're going to dig this hole and then fill it in. I mean, some people would say, sure, $250,000 a year, I'll do it. I don't care. And then other people would say, you couldn't pay me enough to do that. I don't care if you paid me $5 million a year. I just can't do that. So, you know, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
No, that's true. I mean, there are, but I would say the majority of people would eventually, you know, mentally break down. But you, but again, if you're, I mean, if you're attaching a sum of $250,000, there's a justification there.
Well,
it's like, okay, for $250,000, I'll do this. I won't enjoy it, but I'll do it.
I mean, what you were talking about, the people spending all that money and all that time creating graphics for a magazine no one's going to read, that's essentially the same thing. I mean, you're just, you know.
Well, you're right. It is the same thing. And like yesterday, my youngest son, Connor, goes, "Hey, Dad, if someone gave you $1 million to eat Maisie, which is our English bulldog." No, not eat her. $1 million to eat her throw up. Would you do it?
Ugh.
I said $1 million bucks. You bet your ass I'd do it.
Oh, see,
it would be tough.
Challenges,
I'd have to hold back the throw up, but I'd do it.
Challenges like that. I would say yes, but I honestly don't know if I could. Like once the smell hit me. And all of that, I don't know. Like
I could do it. I could mentally prepare for it, and I could do it. Now, could I hold it down? I don't know. I don't know if I could hold it down. But for $1 million, I could do it.
Now, I liked the first question. Would you eat the dog for $1 million? Would you cook up Maisie?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that.
Well,
I mean, I would. Let's put it this way. I wouldn't do that for $1 million. I couldn't do that. My wife and kids would hate me for life. I wouldn't do it. But if we were stranded on an island.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, come on.
And there was literally nothing to eat, and we're on day 20, and I'd kill the dog and eat the dog. In a very extreme circumstance like that.
You know.
Like a Walking Dead situation.
I do kind of take issue here with. His assertion or his question, why isn't this situation seen as a major social problem? I just don't think like people have time to consider like what exactly is supposed to happen. Is everybody supposed to quit their job or something? I mean, he says, just think what kind of culture, music, science, ideas might result if all those people were liberated to do things they actually thought were important. He may have more faith in people than I do.
Yeah, that, you know? And that also goes to the argument of the basic income, you know, universal basic income.
Yes.
There's a big assumption that, you know, Billy Bob is going to start painting like Picasso.
Yeah.
Or is going to write the next War and Peace.
Yeah.
That I just don't think that if you free up someone's time, it's going to equate to the next Shakespeare. You know, I don't really get that, but I think that overall, over a long period of time, if we, you know, were transparent about this, and you know, AI and robots come in and we figure out some system where everyone's happy, it's going to be better for humanity. I think there is a certain amount of soul sucking depression that is not good for society as a whole. If you are digging holes and filling them in, if you're doing something absolutely useless, because I do believe that, you know, at the core of humans and humanity itself is that need and desire to not only better yourself, but better life for other people, to give gratitude, you know. So if you're doing something that is completely lack of meaning, I think it's soul crushing. It's like not just like on a physical level, I think on like a soul level. But I think what the author is not taking into account is, you know, maybe someone's in a bullshit job, right? He's making she's making $150,000 a year, but that $150,000 a year is supporting a loving family out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Where she derives, you know, unbelievable amounts of joy and happiness by having her kids in the right schools, in the right neighborhood. Now, her commute might suck, her job might suck, but she relishes to see those kids' smiles or to watch those kids play soccer games. You know, so you can't just look at it on, you know, just on the work level. You have to look on it on the, it's almost like the ends justify the means in a certain sense, where you're doing something crappy that you hate and you're accepting money for, and you're morally okay for that because it's bettering your family.
Yeah, there's that. I would say two things. One, if someone is really passionate about painting, writing, whatever, they're going to find a way to do that. I mean,
yeah, just stop watching Netflix.
Right. And I mean,
and paint.
Don Quixote, Ulysses, Moby Dick, these were written in times when leisure time was for about.
I just want to, sorry to cut you off. I just want to say I have no idea who any of those people or books or authors are. Yeah, go ahead.
They are books, just to clarify.
Okay. I thought they were places. Well, I have no idea.
You know, Picasso, all that stuff existed in a time when leisure time was enjoyed by about 2% of the population. I mean, the more we've had technology come in, the more leisure time we're supposed to have. And again, like, are people using that to write novels and create paintings and all of that? I mean, these things were written, you know, like Einstein worked as a patent clerk and he did physics in his spare time. So, I mean,
right. No, it's a good point.
So this whole idea that, like, I mean, Dostoevsky, all, you know, they had to work other jobs. They had to do things. I mean, some didn't, but a lot did. And, you know, they didn't make a lot of money. They, you know, existed on very little, and a lot of times were very broke in their own lifetimes. And then also,
if you have, sorry to cut you off, but if you have a bullshit job, that means that you can probably spend an hour a day for your job demands, and then the other 7 to 12 hours, do what you want to do. Write a novel, you know, write a book, write an article, start a blog, start a YouTube channel, whatever you want to do. Start a business, create an app.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you can devote an hour a day to what you want to do, like maybe you go home and you paint for an hour or you write for an hour or something like that, which leads me to my other point. It's like, some of this is like, so what? So somebody has a bullshit job, so what? I mean, they got to make money to survive. And again, this notion that, like, let's say all these robots come in and replace people's jobs, so now they free up all these people, and to go do what? I mean, I don't really know. Like, how many meaningful jobs are out there? And, you know, to talk about creating culture, music, science, ideas. I mean, I love those things, but, like, how, you know, this is not very practical. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, well, yeah, you got to work, you got to pay your rent, you got to put food on the table. Now, I mean, some people take jobs that are very mundane to free them up to do other things, you know, to write or paint or whatever, they could act, or, you know, they work temp. A lot of actors work temp jobs because it frees them up to go to auditions and things like that. If you're going to be making 200 grand a year, it's going to be hard for you to go be an actor. I mean, it's hard to do both, if not impossible. So you got to make choices. So, you know, for some people, 150 grand a year, great. Is my job very meaningful? I don't care. Particularly, they're paying me, so there you go. And other people, if they're really passionate and they like, I really hate this, I really want to go do something more meaningful, well, then they'll make that choice to do that, or they won't, and they'll suffer in silence. And, you know, so I don't know, David. I think I mean, I understand what he's saying. I get it. There probably are, I know there are, a lot of jobs out there that really mean very little. But what exactly is the alternative, I would wonder. This is not a societal problem. I guess that's what I take issue with. This is an individual decision. Like, it's not a big societal shift that has to take place. Like, no government is going to come in and do away with bullshit jobs. No company is really going to do that. They're just, this is an individual decision to make.
And you know, and the open market should, in theory, like, you know, because if the capitalist system is driven by profits and you have people who are not needed, that would result in layoffs. You know, it should auto-correct itself. That's the weird thing about this, is like, why would you want to pay someone $150,000 if they're not pulling their weight? And I guess when you get into a big, large corporation, this is not on the government level, because the government level, this makes sense. This makes sense to me. There could be useless jobs in the government because, you know, they get their budgets and all that stuff. But for a Fortune 500 company, a company listed, you know, on a stock exchange where they have shareholders to answer to, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense why this would be. You know, if your corporation has 50,000 people, but you can do the same job and offer the same product for with 20,000 people, then it would be 20,000 people. It wouldn't be 50,000 people.
Yeah.
But it's not as black and I mean, I think that's what he's trying to say. It's not as black and white as that.
Well, there was that speech in Wall Street that Michael Douglas gives, which apparently is based on a speech Ivan Boesky gave. About greed, you know, greed is good. And he's talking about this company and he's saying there's 35 vice presidents and I don't know what most of them do. And that was an interesting question. And as you say, you'd think that would correct itself and say, okay, well, we need 5 vice presidents, not 35.
Well, that is what private equity comes in. Private equity will come in, they'll buy the assets, they'll buy a controlling stake, and then they'll restructure it.
Yeah.
So the other thing, too, in these, like the Ivan Boeskys, you know, these big Wall Street private equity guys and hedge fund guys are seen as evil. But based on this, they might also be seen as efficient. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a different way of looking at. And look, these guys are driven by greed and the almighty dollar and capitalism. But there might be fat. There might be fat in an organization. And let's say someone buys a corporation for $1 billion and they see like, oh, they look at it and they'd be like, okay, their payroll is 20,000 people, but 5,000 people are utterly, they're bullshit jobs. They're useless.
You know whose name?
So then they fire. What?
You know whose name pops right out in big capital, bold red letters? Matty K. Boom.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I hear we're going to trim the waist, I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, no. When I hear dead weight, that's me. That's the point right at me.
That's Maddie. You start looking around. You start sweating.
Well, then I start rushing in trying to make myself look useful.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. It's like if they fire those 5,000 people, or X amount of people, that's going to make headlines. And look how, you know, ruthless and non-caring these guys are. But maybe they had bullshit jobs. And like you said, the practicality of this is like, okay, let's say 40% have bullshit jobs. If you fire those 40%, what's that going to do to unemployment?
Yeah.
Government paying out coffers. Then all the other businesses that rely on housing, Walmart, you know, people's disposable income. It could, so maybe we're all propped up on this weak tent, and just a strong wind's going to come over and blow us all over.
Well, that's the thing. If you cut somebody who's making 200 grand a year, you know, what's going to happen to their house? They're not going to go out to restaurants. They're not. I mean, this all happened in 2008. You know. People lost their homes, they lost their jobs. So they're not going out to restaurants, and restaurants are closing. The tourist industry suffers. Blah, blah, blah. Those jobs get cut, you know, and it dominoes. And then the economy came back. So, yes, maybe this is all just part of the system. Like, I went out to breakfast this morning. Now, if I was really in dire financial straits, I might not go out to breakfast. And, you know, if that happens to enough people, that restaurant's not going to be in business very long. So, but yeah,
I agree. I think if you're in a bullshit job, just recognize that you're in a bullshit job, and then decide whether you want to stay in said bullshit job, or you want to leave, or you want to do a side hustle, or you want to do X, Y, and Z.
Right, and it's not all or nothing either. It's not like I just need to quit. It's like, no, maybe you need to find something in your life that's meaningful, and you know, and do that. I don't know, like. I don't know what his, again, like, this is an interesting thing to ponder, but again, on this massive societal level. It's just...
Or you can also choose to waste your leisure time like Matt and I are doing with this podcast.
And like you're doing if you're listening to it. So...
Yeah, this is an open society. You can do whatever you want. You can waste some of your best hours, productive hours, talking into a microphone that nobody listens to.
Yeah,
that's a viable option for you.
And then after this, I will have to lay down for a nap because
you all the energy has been sapped out of you.
That's time well spent though, because I'm re-energizing myself.
Getting the batteries, that's right. Plugging back in.
Well, everybody, hopefully your job is meaningful. If it's not, it may just be time for a personal life decision, or you just ride it on out. You know, I don't see anything wrong with riding things out. I do it all the time.
I think we should create some sort of merch for bullshit jobs. Like, I have a bullshit job. Or something, I guess, something more creative.
We gotta
figure a way to monetize this.
How about I heart my bullshit job? I love it. I love my bullshit job. It's great. I go in, chat with people a little bit, maybe work a couple of hours scattered throughout the day, not 2 hours straight. And it's great. Have a few donuts in the break room, yuck it up, and then...
Hey, listen, you can't underestimate the amount of joy that donuts bring into people's lives.
How about a free lunches on, like, Friday? They bring in pizza and stuff.
Oh, Matt.
That's great.
Beautiful.
Do you do that over at Park Bench Media for your employees? You bring in pizza and have a nice wing bar for them?
God, no. If I do that, I dock their pay for the cost of the pizzas.
Even though...
No, we do. Well, nice. I mean, you know, in production, like, if you're on set, all the food is catered.
Yeah.
And if we're working on a big project, yes, we will, you know, do breakfast or lunch. You know, I'm joking around, but we do that. But certainly not every day.
You know what's amazing is that people will work on something like Law & Order, where you get, I mean, for like third meal, we would get shrimp scampi. And people would complain about the food, that it was bullshit, the food. I'm like, look, if you weren't working on this show, you would be probably working in construction where they don't feed you catered meals. You bring a lunch.
Like right, exactly.
95%.
But yeah, no matter what, but that's within like human nature just to complain about anything. Just complain.
Anything. All right, folks, thanks a lot for listening. Please subscribe, download our podcasts. We'd love to, break into the 100,000 market. Any help you can give us, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and Matt's life right now is on the rocks. Oh, yeah, Patreon, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a bullshit job, you know, seriously.
And Matt's going to go in and quit next week, so he really needs some financial support. We're going to have some merch.
Very ill-advised and not even planned move. I'll just go in and quit my job.
Just going in.
Yeah. So
damn the consequences.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And as Matty K just said, please subscribe and share this on social media. And until next time.
All right, everybody. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience. We'd like to thank our sponsors, One Circle Media and the Still Believe app, the only app that delivers video proof of the Tooth Fairy and Santa by simply taking a picture. Download the app at stillbelieve.co today and amaze your kids. And if you work for a studio, network, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain your audience, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I would love to hear from you. And that's it. The end. The sweet end. Until our next audio encounter.